Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Advita Patel. Advita is an award-winning founder, communications expert, international speaker, podcaster, author, and confidence coach. As the founder of Comms Rebel, she's helped numerous organizations cultivate inclusive cultures through the power of effective communication. Advita is also a co-founder of A Leader Like Me, a global inclusive communication consultancy designed to help organizations cultivate a space for everyone. She co-founded the Asian Communications Network, a community designed to help Asian communication professionals thrive through a sense of belonging and mutual support. In 2022, she was named on the Northern Asian Power List in the UK and received the Emerging Leader Award. In 2024, she was recognized as one of the top global employee engagement and experience influencers by Inspiring Workplaces. And this year, she was nominated one of PR Week UK's top most influential women in communications. In January 2025, she began her tenure as president of the Chartered Institute of Public Relations, the first person of color to take on the role in the institute's history. Advita says she is living proof that when you have self-belief and you don't ask for permission to take up space, wonderful things can happen. Advita Patel, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thank you, Charlotte. What a lovely introduction.
Advita, I understand from the things that you've written, and I'm an avid follower of your thought leadership, that not asking for permission to take up space has not always been easy for you. How do you get from there to where you are today?
Such a good question. For me, it's about self-belief and understanding your value. We spend a lot of our time in organizations and in life really conforming to what we believe others want or need from us, because we all have this inner desire to belong and to be accepted. And in order for that to happen, we witness the behaviours around us at times and feel that we must conform to whatever the community that we want to belong in needs from us. So we adjust and adapt our personality, and we lose ourselves in that at times. And we struggle to sometimes understand or recognise who we are and what we do. And the moment I gave myself permission to stop looking for validation and permission from others is the day I would say my life changed.
Oh, that's such a beautiful answer. And it makes me think that, you know, that sense of needing to belong and needing to conform, as we realize it's a trap, we then have to go through a process of unlearning.
Yes.
Is that something you experienced?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You know, I say when I often do talks and workshops that I'm often taught from a very early age from our guardians, our carers, our parents on what's right and what's wrong. And that's fair. You know, we all need the basic needs on how to survive. But then we kind of carry that through to our childhood, right? So our teachers at schools write reports about who we are and what we should be like. And I remember getting school reports from my teacher saying how quiet I was and how they wish all the other children in the class were the same. And I was rewarded for being quiet. And I was rewarded for, you know, staying in my lane and not causing a fuss and not being a distraction to the teachers. And my parents, you know, thanked me and said, "You're such a good girl. Well done." And I then related being quiet and sensible to what the vision of sensible to what the teachers thought that was all through my teenage and early adulthood. And when I started to give myself permission to live my life freely, I had to do a lot of unlearning about what does good look like to me and what do I want to give in this world that we're living in. And I always say, when you're looking at your confidence and you're wanting to build your self-esteem, you have to know yourself really well. And I mean, properly know yourself. And in order to do that, you do need to unlearn some of the habits that you may have picked up from others when you've been working towards belonging and being accepted. And that's a big undertaking. And it can, you know, you may need some therapy, you may need some counseling, you may need to invest in a coach, but it's such an important part of understanding who you are so you can live your life without any restrictions.
And was there a spark or an inciting incident or a moment where you realized the time has come for me to stop asking for permission?
Yes. It was, you know, I had diligently worked my way through my career, done everything that was asked of me by my line managers, the leaders, the directors, the chief exec. You know, I was seen as the talent, you know, the talent pipeline everybody talks about in the organization. And I, you know, for 15 years of working in corporates, I conformed. You know, you need to go and get a certificate in that. You need to go and get some training in this. And you need to be a little bit more vocal about that. You need more gravitas in the room. You need to be more strategic. All of these bits of feedback and advice that you're given, and some of it is really valuable. And some of it, I would say, now learning is a pinch of salt. I got to a point in my career where I realized that permission giving, I was waiting for permission from somebody else that I didn't really value. And it was a bit of an epiphany moment for me when I was driving to work, where I was like, I remember chatting to a friend of mine and I was complaining about how unfair things were and how hard I'd worked for this opportunity and how this opportunity didn't come my way, even though I did everything that people told me to do. And in the end, you know, she turned around and said, she was a bit quiet and I thought I'd lost her actually on the phone. I was like, "Hi, are you still there?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm here. But one thing I'm going to ask you is what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do about it? You know, you can complain to me again and again over the week for 40, 50 an hour while you're driving into work. But what are you going to do to make the change happen?" And that was that moment for me. And I thought, what am I going to do? Am I going to spend the rest of my life being told what I should do and where I should go and conforming to other people's idea of great leadership? Or do I just take control and do my own thing? And that's where my journey, I was in a confidence journey, started. And I started to delve deeper into what is confidence, what is self-esteem, what is self-value and self-worth, and why do so many of us hold ourselves back from living to our potential?
I love it. That moment of truth and empowerment that comes from a good friend. Yes. It happens to so many of us, but we need those people around us.
We do.
Those truth tellers, those people who reflect ourselves back to ourselves.
Yeah.
Who make us realize that change is really needed.
Yeah. The community around you is so powerful. And I am, you know, if you follow me on LinkedIn or Instagram, or you've been part of my world, whether through the app community, hopefully you recognize that the power of the community can change lives. And I am a huge community advocate, because you need people around you, whether that's friends, family, colleagues, peers, neighbors, whatever. You need someone to hold that torch towards you, to put the mirror up, you know, to give you that champion celebration. I always say, don't go where you're just tolerated, go where you're celebrated. And that's really important if we want to thrive, not just survive.
So, Advita, talk to me about all the leadership roles you hold now.
Gosh, yes. Well, I seem to be a bit of a magpie, Charlotte. When you read out my introduction, I was like, goodness me. And I do ask, you know, a lot of folks do say to me and ask me, how do you fit everything in? And how do you get all this stuff done? And for me, it's such an interesting question, because I never really, and it sounds really cheesy, but I don't really see it as work. You know, I see it as helping others find their voice and helping others thrive, whether that's in the workplace through confidence or through inclusion or through communications. And so a comms rebel was set up, I suppose, as a bit of a pushback against the conformity I'd lived for the 15, 16 years I worked in-house. And you know, following the rules and staying in my lane. And comms rebel is about being different and doing things differently and helping people find their inner strength so they can live their life to their full potential, whether they work for themselves or work in business or organizations. And as you said, you know, on LinkedIn, I always try and be as open and be that, I suppose, leader in that space to give people hope and inspiration about what they may or may not recognize in themselves. So that's, you know, Comms Rebel is about inspiring others to be the leaders. And to be a leader, I don't think it's not a job title. Anyone can be a leader at whatever level. It's dependent on you and how you define leadership. And I will always say to folks that 95% of the books out there about leadership have been written by men. And it's about time that we took over that narrative and defined what leadership looks like for us, which is what led to the Asian Comms Network, where we work and encourage and inspire South and East Asian communication professionals to be able to explore their thinking in a safe space. So they don't feel that they have to speak openly in an environment where they don't feel safe or connected. So the Asian Comms Network, which followed on from the race riots, was all about that leadership between Fazana Shioni and myself, the other two co-founders, about how can we lead by example through the privileges that we have that may not be afforded to other people who may feel stuck and alone and isolated. And that then takes me to A Leader Like Me, which was named intentionally because Priya and I, who's my co-founder for A Leader Like Me, realized when you don't see leaders like yourself in organizations, you don't feel that you can lead or belong in that space. And it's important that you get to, again, define that leadership and what that means and what that looks like and remove the scarcity mindset. We're often told that there's only room for one of us in this, you know, dominant culture, and to be able to be bold enough and courageous enough to define leadership and what you want to gain in that organization, or whether it's time for you to exit and move on to somewhere where you're celebrated and not just tolerated.
I love that, because the words representation matters slip so easily off the tongue, don't they?
Yes.
But the gap from saying that to getting the representation that we want and deserve in the workplace is so vast, yes, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's something that people just say, as you just said, you know, it slips off the tongue. We kind of talk about it in a, you know, we want our events to be representative. We want our teams to be representative. But you've got to put action in place. You know, you've got to be able to make those differences. And when there was this whole commentary that came out earlier this year, in, you know, early 2025, when Donald Trump was elected president, and how the vitriol around diversity, equity and inclusion was around meritocracy, and lots of organizations started to scale back from their diversity, equity and inclusion. Initially, you go through the change curve of like disbelief and rage and then upset and then sadness. But when you really reflect on it, it's a sign for me to say that, are these the organizations that will allow me to thrive in the way that I need to? Are these the organizations that I need to give a wide berth to? And are these organizations changing and shifting things because the performative measures they put in place weren't actually having the impact they desired? And it's up to us as individuals to do that due diligence and look through the data set to understand whether or not this is a place we're going to thrive and we're going to be celebrated, or this is a place that we probably need to give a wide berth to and not give our skills and talent to. And for me, it's better to be more overt in that space and then pretend to care and actually cause more damage to those marginalized and underrepresented individuals, then at least you know where you may apply for opportunities and where you might just reject the opportunities that come that way. And I actually, once I got through the change curve, I was like, actually, they're doing us a favor. They're giving us the warning signs that we probably don't belong in that space and we don't want to go there either. And that is their loss.
I remember you saying that so well, and I've quoted it to other people. The fact that if a company can switch off their DEI overnight, it was only ever performative. And do you want to work for an organization whose commitment to diversity, equality, and inclusion is so lightweight, mm-hmm, that they can close it off in 24 hours? And that really helped me, mm-hmm, deal with my shock and horror in those moments. So, you know, the words that you say can be very powerful. I want to pick up on something you said earlier about things not feeling like work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when your vision for yourself, your purpose, your intention, and your work so clearly match the way you describe, then it stops feeling like work. Is that how you experience it?
Yeah, it's a purpose. When I was doing my unlearning and relearning about who I wanted to be in this world that we're all existing in, I realized the reason I felt so stuck in my corporate career is because I was being restricted on what I could and couldn't do. And as soon as I started to unlearn some of the behaviors that I picked up on and started to relearn about who I was and what I wanted, the purpose came out. And everything I do does align to that purpose of helping people see their potential and helping organizations create inclusive cultures so people can thrive and live their best life. Nobody should ever be feeling like they don't belong or don't feel included and feel isolated. And I've experienced so many of my friends, peers and colleagues really dislike the workplace and feel so lost and stuck and sad about what's happening that they feel out of control and they're just merely existing. And I think we live in such a, you know, despite the adversity that surrounds us sometimes, we've got this brilliant opportunity to live in a world that hopefully we should all have fair and equitable chance to belong in. And if we can make those changes happen through our own control centers, you know, imagine the differences, the kind of differences we can make through the waves that we put out there. So I always say, you know, one of my big things is small ripples create big waves. You don't have to be the lobbyist, you know, trying to get policies and procedures changed if you're not a decision maker in that space. But you can certainly open the door and create a welcoming environment and be inclusive in your language and how you present yourself and how you help others be part of that conversation. And it's about finding your level of allyship, advocacy, or accomplice, depending on where you are in your journey of learning.
Yeah, I love that so much because, as you say, not everyone's going to be, you know, lobbying Parliament.
Nope.
But we can change how we behave. Mm-hmm. We can change how we show up. We can change who we shine a light on.
Mm-hmm.
We can change which voices we allow to rise up. So we are actually all powerful, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we all have it, regardless of the different privileges that we all have, because we all have more and less than others. You know, that's something we need to understand. And we spoke about, in our book, Building a Culture of Inclusivity, we spoke about the pyramid, privilege pyramid. Because one thing to remember is that we all do have it. You know, I am lucky to be surrounded by an incredible community in a safe space where I can thrive, take risks, and be comforted that I'll be supported even if they fail. Not everybody has that. You know, not everybody can be as vocal online as I am. Not everybody can speak up about the discrepancies or the injustice that they are served because they're fearful of their role and their career, and I totally understand that. So recognizing your own privilege about what you can and can't do is the number one step of understanding where you sit on the allyship scale and how you can support others who may not have as much privilege as what you have and where the power dynamics lie in that.
Yeah, that's so important. So Advita, you run various organizations, both as leader, as founder and co-founder, and you're also about 100 days into your role as president of mm-hmm. the CIPR. What is your leadership style?
My leadership style is definitely collaborative. I am fairly open and coaching style is what I would say, Charlotte. I am not a dictator. Like I am not one to be like telling folks how and when they should do stuff. And I lean into curiosity a lot more. So I'm a very curious leader. And if somebody has said something and done something that goes against my values, I will always try and lean into the why. So explain to me why it's so important to you to do it this way. Tell me more about your thinking on how you got there. I'm struggling to understand the decision that you've made and I'd really appreciate some time to explain that to me. Obviously, there are, you know, when you are a leader, there are decisions that you do need to make as a leader and understanding what those are and what that looks like is really important. And the same as the president role from the Chartered Intrapreneurial Relations, you know, realizing and recognizing what is that role of president and how am I there to support and encourage and inspire others to, first of all, understand the opportunities available to them as leaders within the volunteering sector, and to hopefully have hope that I, you know, if I can see Advita there as a leader, then hopefully one day I may want to be president and do that. You don't have to follow a certain pattern of leadership. And this is what I said earlier on, you know, when we chatted about that 95% of the books are leadership books are written by men who define leadership, right? You know, if you Google what is leadership and you ask AI what is leadership, it kind of conforms to all this kind of prescription that people have written and followed each other. And so we need to find our pathway about what a good leader is. Because I didn't enjoy line managing. Like, I just found it quite restrictive because there were so many policies and processes and boxes you had to kind of fit into and do. And then I realized the reason I didn't enjoy it is because I wasn't given the freedom to create what I believed a line manager should be like. And I am a very, like I said, a very curious individual, and I love interacting with individuals and finding out more about their life and what they stand for. And this is why I did the cultural intelligence training, because, you know, from a global scale, understanding culture is important. But from a local scale, recognizing not everybody comes from the same lived experience as you can really help you understand the differences that people bring and see the power in those differences. And that's where I would say my leadership style is. It's very much about curiosity, informal, collaborative support.
Yeah, so you're changing the old patterns of leadership for sure. And you know that I've written a leadership book, which is due out in June later this year, and you're kindly one of my endorsers. And for me, I'm exploring leadership through the prism of reputation, diversity, and leadership. And I wrote that book not knowing what my thesis was. I wrote it with, like you, a sense of curiosity of, let me go to leaders who don't fit a pattern, who don't fit the standard, the stereotype, the archetype, and ask them questions around reputation, leadership, and diversity to see what I can uncover and what I can learn. And so much of what you're saying chimes with many of my interviewees, which is know yourself incredibly well.
Yeah.
Get coaching and therapy if you need it, because we have to unlearn what has been codified onto us by culture in order to make change. And then get really curious and really honest and be honest about who you are as a leader. And I also found that my interviewees, like you, are very thoughtful about language, very thoughtful about inclusivity, very thoughtful about how they make sure that everybody feels included. But on the topic of reputation, Advita, how do you think about your own reputation?
I am fiercely protective of my reputation. It's something that I have worked hard to build. And which is why I am curious about individuals. I won't just jump on the bandwagon without doing my diligent work, due diligence. You know, we are rife with misinformation and disinformation, and the rumor mill is real if you don't spend a little bit of time and effort to understand the stories behind the noise that's coming your way. So you'll never really find me jumping onto the bandwagon or leaping onto the latest trend, because it's really important for me, from my reputation, to look at what's going on and identify and recognize the real story behind it and fact check. And that's something I believe that some of us have lost the skill in. You know, we live in a busy world, a very noisy world, a distracting world. We are constantly inundated with information and noise from social media. Now we've got AI. So the constant stream of content is coming at us at speed. We as human beings are not conditioned to live in a world of constant state. We're not meant to be switched on 24/7. And in order to address some of the challenges that come our way, some of us forget and disregard the due diligence we may need to take when information is shared with us. And from a communications perspective and a public relations perspective, this is a really important part of our skill. And we need to be able to decipher information, understand where it came from and what that does that mean for reputation. Because when we don't do that, it's going to not only impact our personal reputation, but our organizational reputation. And people will be looking at us for, why on earth did you get into this state in the first place when you haven't done the diligence that you advise other people to do especially as public relations and communication professionals. So for me, reputation is incredibly important. A lot of folks make mistakes because they haven't done the due diligence and they haven't fact checked and they haven't done the date and they haven't taken the time to understand what this means and leap into something without actually thinking about the consequences of that decision that they made. So I will always advise, even in crisis, take a breath. Let's just see, let's look at the data sets around us. Let's look at the information that's coming our way. Let's put our holding statement just until we get our thoughts in order. Then let's address it properly, because I've seen so many organizations and individuals make mistakes by putting out a statement or putting something out there without actually doing the fact checking that they probably should have done before they did that.
Yeah, and that's relevant to organizations, but it's also relevant to individuals.
Yes.
And what you're cautioning against, if we think of it from an individual perspective, is you may perceive that there's some value in being the first to respond or the quickest on the draw. Take some time to take a look at the situation before you leap in with your opinion, because we all know once it's out there, you can never take it back, no matter how many times you apologize or try and reframe it.
Yeah. And you get pushed into it, right? In the influencer world that we're in today, you know, people, when you gather a following and you have people looking at you for advice and thoughts and support, you feel pressured into, again, conforming to what they want. So you kind of, and I've seen so many kind of influencers do this and thought leaders, you know, it's a bit of a nicky word, but you know what I mean? You know, you're kind of putting yourself out there and you're quite confident talking about certain topics, and then someone will expect you to comment on, you know, a crisis or an incident or something that's happened in an organization. And some people leap into it really quickly because they want to be the first to have an idea around it. And then it completely backfires. And what I want to advise the listeners is, if you are ever in that situation, never feel pressure. Take a breath. You don't always have to work out loud. You know, you can actually take it internally and figure things out before you respond. Within, you know, depending on your influence and your power, there is a time restriction on some of this stuff, I understand. You know, you don't want you to disappear completely, depending on your leadership and where you are and what you're leading on. But we seem to be living in this world of immediacy, like everything has to happen straight away. You know, we need to say something right now. And there's power in the strategic silence, I think, sometimes. And going around and making sure that we have, and the fact checking thing for me, Charlotte, is so important. We just seem to have lost the art of doing that well, especially with AI and the tools now available around us to create content, that a lot of folks are just putting in a prompt and sending and copy and pasting whatever the AI tool generates and just post it. And they haven't done the fact checking, and it's misrepresented, and other people's credit has been taken away from them. And what folks need to remember about AI is that it's a tool that's used by humans to feed, and humans are biased. So the information that, and the prompts that come out of AI are biased because it's humans that are fed in that information in the first place. So not saying never use those tools. You have to keep up with the times, but don't feel pressure to make decisions quickly and put in a prompt on ChatGPT just so you're quick and you feel pressure to be quick.
Yeah, that's such great advice. Thank you so much. And Advita, do the three elements that I love to talk about, which is diversity, reputation, and leadership, do those come to a meeting point for you in any particular way?
Yeah, 100%. You know, they it's like a triangle, right? If one collapses, the others collapse as well. And it's really important to use all three of them and understand where you sit on the kind of attributes or the traits of all three. Diversity obviously impacts how we manage our reputation around the conversations that we're having in either personally or professionally. And that's you know, a really key part of the work that we do as communication professionals. And this is why Priya and I wrote our book, actually, The Building an Inclusive Culture, because communication professionals have a big part to play in this, you know, the three areas that you mentioned. And sometimes we retreat from it because we feel that if we don't know everything about all three traits or inclusion or equity or diversity or reputation, then we shouldn't really contribute. And in fact, if you think about the role that we play in the world that we're in, we're often the pen holders to some of this, or we're the advisors to our leaders, or we're guiding people, you know, to go down the right path. And we need to be able to have that confidence in ourselves and how each three link in and what we're bringing to the table. And it's never about, and I'll say this, because it's never about taking away from anybody else, but it's about making that table much bigger and allowing people to have that seat without having to beg for that seat.
I love that image, making the table bigger. That's something I'm going to take away from this conversation. Thank you so much, Advita. So now we get to my standard questions. Give us a book recommendation.
The Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes. That book transformed my life. It was such an incredible listen. I listened to it actually in an audiobook, but yeah, loved it. If you haven't read it, if you haven't heard it, listen to Shonda. She's the lady who's written Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, those big shows in America. But that book changed my life.
I'm loving this because you know I'm a voracious reader and I'm getting all these amazing new book recommendations. So after every time I record a pod, I'm off to my local bookshop to order it. So thank you very much for that. You know my passion and yours is as well, is to help us build a new generation of leaders from diverse backgrounds and of diverse identities. What would be your three leadership tips for people who are coming into the workplace now and emerging as leaders and really indicating that they want to step up and take on leadership roles?
First tip is what I said earlier, is about leaning to your curiosity. Don't assume anything. That's really important when you're trying to craft your leadership style, because sometimes, and it is important, right? One thing I will say, because some people misinterpret what I say, is that feedback is important and gaining advice is important in order for you to grow and thrive. But you do have to be quite open for productive disagreements as well, or discussions about whether you think that's the right way for you or not. Just because somebody does it that way doesn't mean that you have to. So when you lean into that curiosity and you stop the assumptions and the stereotypes you might have about what a good leader is, you can thrive even more than you would do if you didn't kind of do that. The second tip I would also talk about, don't fear asking for support. Like, ask for mentors, you know, ask for coaches, ask for support around development if you feel that you need it. Don't wait for your leader to come to you to tell you where the improvements need to happen. The sooner you take control of your own development, the sooner you can control the narrative and the decisions and the pathway that you want to take. And I've seen so many folks say to me, oh, my line manager doesn't care about me. In our one-to-ones, they didn't once mention about progression. Well, if they don't mention it, then you take control of it. Ask them, put a business case together to demonstrate why the investment should be made in you and what you can bring to that team and what that looks like. And be quite smart about the decisions that you're making about your training. And the third thing is, you can't be everyone's cup of tea, otherwise you'll be a mug. And I stand by that statement. You know, the likability factor, the recovering, a recovering people pleaser, as I call myself. We do try and as at the start of the pod, we spoke about trying to fit in and belong. And I think if I realised this in my early 20s, then, I'm really proud of what I've achieved, but maybe I could have got there quicker rather than going through, the pathways that I went through. But don't feel that you have to be liked by everyone. You do need to be respected, but you don't need to go on a weekend break to Rome with every person in the organization. You know, as long as they respect you and you're adding value, then that's what you should really care about.
I love that. You can't be everyone's cup of tea, otherwise you'd be a mug.
Yeah.
And that's about really owning who you are and understanding yourself deeply. So that's such beautiful advice and takes us very neatly back to the quotes at the beginning. So thank you for making that lovely connection. Times are quite tough. What brings you joy?
My friends, my family, the work that I do. We spoke about the business of my role or the vibrancy of the work that I do, and I don't see it as work, but I do take time out to look after myself. You know, so I'll make it a priority to go to the gym and work out and have that whole hour just for me, and not look at it as something that I need to conform to, but something that's going to make me stronger. You know, I will make sure that I go for dinners and go out and meet my friends and make time for them and my family and spend time with them. That's what brings me joy. It's the glimmers, everyday glimmers, right? I stopped years ago. I used to be like, oh, when I go on holiday or when I get that favorite handbag that I want or when I go to do this. Now I don't wait for things. I look for everyday glimmers. And we all need to look for those everyday glimmers that bring us a little bit of joy. Because life isn't linear. You know, we go through ups and downs, and it's how we can manage those ups alongside the downs that will give us the joy.
Looking for everyday glimmers. What a beautiful place to end. Advita Patel, thank you for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.